Veritex Community Bank Studios. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. Brendan behind the glass. It is a Monday edition of The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Well, the decision day for Deshaun Watson is finally here. Deshaun Watson, the recommendation from Sue Robinson is a 6-game suspension. For Deshaun Watson, the NFL has 3 days to appeal, and then the head of the appeal process is the NFL commissioner, Roger Goodell. Blankers, looking at some of this, first 6 games, awfully light for someone who had over 20 sexual misconduct cases. Yes, I know none of them were criminal. Yes, I know Brazoria and Harris County both no billed any criminal charges for Deshaun Watson. Yes, Deshaun Watson has settled all but one of the civil complaints from all of the accusers. But the fact that you have 4 cases brought by the NFL, there was a case thrown out because the NFL didn't interview that woman, and that the NFL interviewed a total of 12 women altogether in this entire process when you had over 20 women accusing Deshaun of sexual misconduct. It's almost gross negligence by the National Football League.
Yeah, it really is, Jeremy. And I think that when you look at it, the more you dive into it and delve into every aspect of it, much like some of the details you mentioned, you think to yourself, what is their thinking? And the only thing that makes sense to me, because of the fact that they so grossly overlooked how many cases there actually were and how many people they actually talked to and how many females should have had their say and input into whatever that they decided to come down with a decision levied on, I think that this is all set up so that the NFL can try and look as good as possible. For all the missteps with Ray Rice, for all the missteps they've done in the past, for this being the first time that they have basically taken a step back so that it didn't look like they had any chance to manipulate the process or do things and lead it down a certain path, they now can play hero. And due to the court of public opinion and people like us and others who are questioning, was this a big enough or a hard enough hitting sentence, they can step in at the end of the day because, as you started this with, it was the recommendation of Sue Robinson. It wasn't the final end-all be-all. So now whether they appeal or they just come in with their cape on and say, yeah, that's what Sue Robinson said, but we felt like that was grossly negligent and hurtful to the women that had to suffer the pain and everything they went through in this process. We're going to make it this amount. I could see that happening because they're trying to build up. They're always worried about their image. They're always worried about self-inflating their marketability and their likability. And I could see this being an instance where they could use this situation to make themselves look good by coming in and trying to be heroes.
Yeah, I don't think that the NFL, like Sue Robinson didn't do that with the idea, though, of like making the NFL look good.
No.
Like, I think Sue Robinson's decision was Sue Robinson's decision.
Yes.
Now, what happens post Sue Robinson's decision? I think that you're right. I think it could do some things that the NFL is going to look at, right? Because, like, there's been a lot of criticism about the 6 games. It's way too light. This is not enough. How are you doing this? And then you look at Trevor Bauer and Major League Baseball, the amount of money that he's lost, the amount of games that he's lost, and he's been away for his sexual misconduct stuff that he had going on as well. So a lot of people are looking at this, and you're right. Like, they've been thrown, like, every thing that I'm reading about this, even Goodell's getting dragged for this. Goodell's being dragged over this, and he had zero to do with the actual decision of the Sue Robinson and the NFL's investigation.
Even as you mentioned it, though, Jeremy, here's the other thing. It's such a bad look for the NFL just in the stuff that you touched on, but how about the fact that you look like you got played because the Browns restructured a contract so we wouldn't lose any money, and lo and behold, he's only going to lose $330,000. That's just egg all over your face if you're the NFL. You allowed a team and a guy to play you after this gross misconduct and get out of it scot-free, essentially. Of course he's going to settle with all these women. He's got all the money in his back pocket. He won't have to fork out in a suspension.
No, yeah, I mean, the amount of money that he's losing for this is very, very light. Because I think it's what, how much money is he making a game this year? It's like $50,000 a game this year.
He's going to lose $330,000 total with no money for a fine involved in any kind of suspension.
Yeah, it's he's getting off. And he also used the money that he made with the Texans previously, right, to fight this whole thing. And now you have the 99.9% left of $230 $70 million contract, the largest at the time guaranteed contract in NFL history, that's still looking ahead of him. Now, from like an NFL perspective, because the NFL has 3 days to appeal this decision by Sue Robinson, and then the head of the appeal process is still Roger Goodell. And this is also the first time that Sue Robinson, I believe, like anything of substance, a significant suspension recommendation from Sue Robinson that she's been able to levy on an NFL player. So this is a pretty monumental and milestone, right? Yeah. Because the NFLPA, the NFL, part of their CBA was that they would have an independent arbiter in any situation like this. But the NFL still has the power to appeal. And then Roger Goodell oversees the appeal process as well. So I don't think it can get more than six. Like, I don't think it can get much higher than 6 games. Now, I don't think that ultimately it's going to be a 6-game suspension because, like you said, the NFL, from a PR perspective, is getting crushed. The perception right now for the NFL is not a very good one. So the NFL is going to, I think, appeal this in the next 3 days. I think that they probably tack on 2 more games on top of this as well. So the NFL can be like, well, look what we did. We added 2 games to the suspension of Deshaun Watson because we felt that 6 was light. We felt like 6 was very soft, so we're going to add 2 games. Because the NFL, if they accept the recommendation here, if they say, you know what, we're not going to appeal, 6 games it is, because the NFLPA said they're not going to appeal, why would they? 6 games is light. Right. If the NFL does not appeal this, I think that the negative PR and the negative perception that exists currently right now since the news of this came out is only going to grow.
Well,
I feel like they have no choice but to appeal.
No, you have to, one way or the other, and like you and I were talking about it, and Brendan before the show, they have one of 2 ways that they're going to exercise their right to push back, and they have to. It's not whether they want to or not, or they're going to mull it over. They just have to. For the overall look, and like I said, appeal of the league itself, they have to either file the appeal or they have to say, hey, we appreciate Judge Robinson's decision and her recommendation based on what we know and also what we've been through with past precedents, with other instances, Ben Roethlisberger and Zeke Elliott, for 2 that come to mind. We have to give him more. There's just too much more involved, and you can get into the code of conduct for the players and say, this was such a bad look for us as a league for so many weeks upon weeks into years, and also not just the team itself and the Texans, but also the entire league and what everybody was talking about. We can't sit and rest and say, 6 games is enough. We have to do more, because if you don't, you're right. The ramifications, just like we said, this is something that Deshaun's going to live with for the rest of his career, the rest of his life probably. The league is still going to be trying to wash their hands clean of this for months upon years, and the only way to at least try and save some face for the league is you've got to push back.
Yeah, to me, it's fascinating that the NFL, the numbers that are out there, the women that they met with, is light. Like, what are they doing, you know? Like, what's the process like whenever you're trying to come to terms with a suspension length for Deshaun Watson that's appropriate for the misconduct he had going on, for the shame that he is, you know, basically putting on the NFL, because you have somebody that's being accused of a lot of sexual misconduct. I understand no criminal charges. I understand the no bills in 2 separate counties. But if you have the NFL that are bringing 4 cases in, and the 5th case was thrown out because the NFL did not interview the women, and that you interviewed a total of 12 women. To me, that's criminal. And 1194 is texting us in saying Busby told the women to stop interviewing with the NFL. The accusers aren't the only people you can interview in this entire process. There's plenty of witnesses. There was the text message chain with somebody who was formerly employed by the Houston Texans. Just because you're a Busby client, then Busby, if this text is true, is saying that he told the women to stop interviewing with the NFL, which I find hard to believe because Busby was always very loud and vocal about the fact that the NFL wasn't talking to his accusers, if you remember that. Mm-hmm. So I don't think, but look, lawyers, right? Busby can't just speak publicly and say that the NFL is not talking to our accusers, and then on the other side of the mouth, out of his mouth, he's telling the accusers not to talk to the NFL. I don't believe that to be true. It wouldn't be the first time I've been fooled, but I'm not buying that. The fact that the NFL interviewed so few women in this judgment is it's a travesty. It is a shame, and it's something that you look at the NFL saying, "What are you doing? Like you changed the way that you're going to look at these cases. You got the arbiter. You got all of this stuff. We don't want Goodell being the, you know, the end all be all, the total full authority of what is going on." Yet you talk to a fraction of the amount of people that you talk to. This investigation's a scam.
For the amount of time that it took to already have details surfacing that they didn't uncover enough, that they didn't go deep enough and delve into as many different options as they could. Because as you said, you could have talked to the bellman at the Houstonian. We even could. We knew people that were formerly in that position that told us they knew what was going on. The equipment guys that got fired that were bringing over the massage tables. The security guy that gave them the legal document to get signed for all the different women that he was interacting with. There was all these different elements, all these different people. And it seems like everybody else knew more than what the NFL knew and that they didn't want to know as much as they could possibly know by uncovering more and talking to more people. It's a travesty to me that we could have gone as high as 30 is the numbers we heard in terms of potential victims. But yet when you look at how many the league actually talked to for this, and it was less than half, what's going on?
Yeah, the fact that this is the first one too, like, and I like the precedent stuff. Like, I hear people talking about that for Zeke and for Ben Roethlisberger. This is supposed to be a new day. Like, this is supposed to be when you have an independent arbiter that takes the argument of the NFLPA, that takes the argument of the NFL, and then you rule decision. For in my opinion, if you're changing the process and you're changing the system and you're changing the due process of all of this, then you
adjudication?
Yeah, the adjudication process. That's the word I was looking for. Thank you. Mm-hmm. You have to eliminate precedents. Like, this is a new day. It's a new regime. It's a new era for the NFL conduct policy. And this was the time for Sue Robinson to set an example, and she failed, and the NFL investigation failed as well.
I don't think that she wanted to. She doesn't work for the league. So she wanted to do this as Sue Robinson judge. She didn't want to factor in what the league was obviously more focused on trying to factor in and being a big pressing issue for the league. Because you look at past precedents and you say, for Zeke and for Ben Roethlisberger, those were only one victim situations. You know, the situation we're talking about here, the magnitude of it, just in sheer numbers alone, let alone how many people were affected in a negative way and all the details that we already seen surface in Sports Illustrated and everywhere else, was like, this is so much on a different level that you can't just fall back on past precedents and say, well, they got, so he gets. No, that's not the case, because this is apples and oranges.
713-780-ESPN, Sue Robinson's decision, 6 games for Deshaun Watson. Is it enough? And will it stand at 6? 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. The Hive is buzzing on a Monday afternoon. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. We'll continue the conversation. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN97.5 and ESPN92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, it's about hurricane season. Hurricane season's on the horizon, and the best time to get your house prepared is right now. Before everybody else tries to jump on it, before you get to have to stand in line and wait and see if someone can get out, look at your roof, make sure that everything is up and up, and then all of a sudden, before you know it, no one got to your house, a hurricane hits in your area, and suddenly you've got water damage and furniture damage and roof damage and so much more. And you don't want that, because you want to be ahead of the game. So you go to Fitz Roofing, FITZRoofing.com, and you go to the very best. Fitz Roofing takes care of people in the surrounding Houston area, and they have for a long time, and they've got a resume that backs it up. They've got the best warranties in the business, the best products in the business, starting with CertainTeed shingles, and the fact is they got the best ratings in the business, and that means something to you too. It starts with a free, no-obligation inspection. All it takes is you picking up your phone. You call them at 832-521-3001, and they come to you, and they see what you got going on, and they tell you how they can help and what they can do. You want them to do the job, you book the appointment before, during, and after the process is complete. They're going to take care of you every step of the way, and you can rest easy knowing no matter when the hurricane hits and what's going on, you are prepared and your house is as good as it can be as it gets ready for hurricane season in Houston. And we know that can be a big deal. Check them out today, FITZRoofing.com, and see all the services they can offer you in a variety of different ways to help you and your house. But the most important thing right now with hurricane season on the horizon, focus on your roof, focus on your house, and prepare now before it's too late. It's Fitz Roofing, making a difference one home at a time.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right. The Deshaun Watson news has come down. 6 games. So the Judge Sue Robinson laying down the 6-game suspension. OG on Twitch saying, stop blaming the NFL. The NFL suggested a year. Blame the judge, Sue Robinson. I blame both. I blame the judge for giving such a soft, light suspension. with all of the smoke around Deshaun Watson. And then also I blame the process. Yeah, you can recommend recommend a year suspension like the NFL did, which OG is right, and they still can appeal, which I expect them to do, and then I expect them to add two games to the Deshaun Watson suspension as well and get up to the eight. But the way that it also, like, we threw out some of the numbers. The amount of people you were interviewing in this, the low amount of people that you're interviewing in this, and whether Tony Busby told his clients to stop talking to the NFL or not because he didn't like the questioning, which he did mention the questioning of the NFL, which is another point we'll get to in just a second. That's not enough. Like, you don't need only those people. They have witnesses. They have people that worked with them. You have people that were working at these other massage therapy places that were going on as well. So the number of people that was interviewed by the NFL, even if it got them to a one-year recommendation, is light and soft, because you can then use that evidence that you're getting in interrogation and questioning witnesses to the judge, and then the judge has more to work from.
Yeah, look, I'm not trying to pass judgment negatively on the league yet. I'm waiting to see what they do, how they react. You know, they're following the process that, whether it was all them that laid it out or that it was agreed upon in the new collective bargaining agreement, that in order to give everybody a more fair approach to any kind of punishment levied, that they were going to take a step back. They were going to get an independent person to get involved. In this case, Judge Sue Robinson. She was going to be the main person involved to get all the details together and get into every bit of the case. At a certain point, the league does have that final say-so, so that as a league, as a private entity, they can do whatever they choose to do. And if they so choose, they will. And that's what I'm waiting to see. And that's what I want to hear. Because I commend them for being able to take their egos out of it and say, look, so that everybody thinks that everybody's getting a fair shake, we'll take a step back. But that doesn't mean at the end of the day, if whoever we've agreed upon as the person that is going to be the arbitrator decides something that we think is far too lenient, that we can't come in as a league and say, time out. Look, we appreciate their efforts, but we've already gone through this as a league. We know these players have done this previously. We know all these different things to say, look, the image as it relates to just the whole code of conduct is enough for us to be able to say, look, you aren't well-versed on this, and you're not supposed to be. You're focusing on the case itself. As it relates to our code of conduct for players, we think that this is too lenient. Therefore, we're going to get involved and add this or do that. That's what I'm waiting to find out, so that then I'll pass judgment on the league. Because I think if they just, put their hands behind their back and say, yeah, that's good with us too, I think they're making a huge mistake, and I think that they completely lose the spirit of everything that was put in place in this new collective bargaining agreement.
Yeah, I do too. And I think that the NFL, just the way that everybody's looking at them, they're going to appeal because they have no choice not to. If Roger Goodell and the NFL don't appeal in the next 3 days, what does that say about them? What's the perception and all the tweets and all the stories going to say? Oh yeah, we just accepted the 6-game suspension for Deshaun Watson. Whenever we recommended a year, whenever the others, look, and I understand negotiation, one side saying zero, one side saying a year. But if you're going to say a year, it's six, you have no choice but to appeal, especially the way that you're being dragged right now.
I don't necessarily disagree with your thought process here, but at the same time, you can appeal, but you kind of are pressured into only stopping there, right?
Well, Roger Goodell oversees the appeal process.
I get that. I guess my thing is, you finally – the NFL has been criticized for as long as I can remember, yep, about having Goodell being the only one involved in these decisions. And for the first time ever, yep, there's somebody else involved. And if he were to make the decision to go against that, I think – I'm going to be honest with you. I think there's backlash on both sides. I told you guys months ago,
the
six
backlash,
games was the number I thought was coming.
Well, yeah, pat yourself on the back. Let's give him a golf club.
Well, a lot of, Chuck did the same thing. He's got one of those, what they call it, a turkey print, when you used to put the big handprint on your back. Chuck's got one on his back, too. Look, I think here's the thing. Everything fluctuates and changes based on all the information and how things played out. There was a time that we thought it was going to be six games, and I kept making the comparison to Zeke. But then with more allegations and more things popping up and the way everything kept being handled by Busby, it just gave you more and more that with all the public negativity being zeroed in on Deshaun in the league, that there was more people getting to the point where they were saying, it can't just be six games. It has to be more. You can't give him the same punishment as guys that did far less. So that's why I think it changes and it fluctuated. I'm surprised it's as light as six games, but Yeah, Brandon, I mean, I'm going to give you the golf clap, too, then. I mean, you have.
Yeah,
well,
good job.
I'm not trying to, like, celebrate it. But what I'm saying is, I thought from the beginning there were reasons why it made sense for it to be lower. I'm not saying that's what it should be, but just in the way the NFL operates, six games kind of stood out to me as a marker that made sense because he was never technically indicted. And now that he's got it, I just think, like, obviously, there is rightfully backlash today. To have six games for Watson and a year for Calvin Ridley is the most absurd thing I can ever imagine.
Well, I disagree with that. The fact that you can't spit on the integrity of the game by betting on the game and suggest that you should have less than a year or even side-by-side comparison Ridley and Watson.
I don't have a problem with a year for Ridley. I do think it's fine to say, if that's worth a year, is this really only worth six games?
To me, it's an apple and oranges comparison. Like, you're talking about the integrity of the game versus your conduct outside of the game. To me, it's two completely different things.
At the end of the day, though, when you're talking optics, when you're talking about how the NFL is going to get crushed if they don't appeal, the optics of that are terrible.
Sure.
Even if it's not actually terrible.
The fact that the NFL is way more strict, if we're being honest, based on the integrity of the game versus the conduct of a player off the field of the game. Look at Brady. Brady got, four games for deflating some balls? That's the integrity of the game. Ridley, the integrity of the game. Now, you can argue, is it fair that the NFL looks like way more difficult and strict when you're talking
gambling.
About the... I think that's integrity. Like, the gambling of the game, deflating the footballs, that's integrity of the game. Like, they're way stricter on that than they are... like personal conduct off the field.
I don't disagree with that. I just think that there is going to be backlash either way.
You're right, but the backlash is two different things, right? The backlash, if the NFL does not appeal, comes from its fans. It comes from its viewers. It comes from the people that spend money on the game. Now, I'm not naive to think it's going to influence it. I don't think that if the NFL says, you know what, we're not going to appeal, I still think stadiums are sold out. I still think the TV ratings are going to be up. I don't think it really moves the needle on that front. Now, if the NFL decides to appeal, where the backlash now comes from is the NFLPA, after the NFLPA, in good faith, negotiated with the NFL to have an independent arbiter, and then the very first high-profile case, you're saying, you know what, I'm Roger Goodell, I got this.
Yeah, we agreed with this until we didn't like the way it went, and now we're going to change our mind, is a bad look. But I think it's also a bad look from a league perspective, because you're not dealing with a Pete Rose-type situation. But the fact that you're going to take a guy because of the gambling aspect, and again, it's still questioned as to how, you know, the little amount that he put down on games and what he did, and I understand your integrity argument, but at the same time, you gave him a year, and you're going to give this guy six games. It's a horrible look, especially because you talked about we're talking about all these women involved. And the other thing that I think the league really got played on is the fact that as much as they were ticked off when the Browns did what they did, it's one thing to say we're going to extend this guy and give him $230 million. But the way that they restructured it so that this year he was only making $1 million, and so therefore he's only going to lose $330,000, is a horrible slap in the face, bad look across the board. And it's got to be something that affects everyone that's been involved in this case going, well, if he doesn't feel it with a suspension as long as you thought it should be, he should feel it in his pocketbook. But he's not going to feel it there either. So when is it going to do something that hits him somewhere where it slaps some sense into him and gets him to realize he did wrong and he's being punished? Because right now it looks like he's just kind of going, see, for the most part, you guys now have to believe it. I was right. You were wrong. I'm in the clear and I'm gone.
The NFL only coming over the top with that aspect. A fine? Like a significant fine. Millions. But not lengthening the games?
Yeah. I think it'd be like a happy compromise, right? Now you're like somewhat saving face, but not really. It's like, okay, let's slap on a fine here. That way we can look high and mighty, a little bit powerful, but then also not ticking off the NFLPA, which is something that's tough to do. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Big C, you're in the Hive of the Killer Bees.
Hey, happy Monday, boys.
Happy Monday, Big C.
I agree with all three of you. First off, Goodell, you can't be judge, jury, and executioner. And then when y'all finally hire someone on the outside to look into something, and they give you a ruling, you're like, you know what, I don't like that. I'm going to take it back. That is immediately going to piss off the NFLPA, who was acting in good faith, and they're not going to want to handle it. So you're right. Someone on both sides is going to be pissed off about it. Now we're going to talk about him getting the extra suspension tight on. He will. It'll be 8 games, which is what I've been saying from the get-go. But that heavy fine, yes, he needs to – his whole paycheck for the entire year needs to be gone in order to appease someone, and it's still not going to be enough for people out there. So the NFL is like, you know what? We're going to try to do something. It's not going to be enough. Yeah, we're going to take a PR hit like we always do, but we're going to come out roses because people are still going to go, still going to go to stadiums, still pay their money to watch the product.
Appreciate the call, Big C. Yeah, he agrees with all of us. That's it's a good way to curry favor with the Killer Bees. Bennett, there's a trade in the Major League Baseball. A big name has been traded in the MLB. It's a former Houston Astro farmhand, too. The Brewers are trading Josh Hader to the Padres, according to Jeff Passan. Ken Rosenthal says it's close. So there goes a big lefty arm at the back end of the bullpen. That's not a Houston Astro. I'm surprised they traded him.
I'm surprised they traded him, and it shows you that a team probably doesn't want – one team doesn't want it on their payroll and just refuses to pay him, and another team that just doesn't seem like money's an object – keeps on adding to try and get over the hump and try and compete with the Dodgers. That's a big deal.
Well, Hader is on the move. He's going to San Diego. One big bullpen arm is off the trade block. Is the bullpen worries the biggest need for the deadline? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Dan Graziano is going to be joining us at 1:15. Good day to get him. Talk about Deshaun Watson, what else is going on around the NFL. Also at 2 o'clock, we do it every Monday at 2 o'clock, our Mailbag Monday. So you got some questions for the Killer Bees, some love advice, some dating advice, some food advice. If sports talk, you can ask us any question you want to. Mailbag
someone
Monday,
asked why Jeremy's hip hurts.
Well, I don't want to talk about that now.
And then someone answered it because he can't figure it out for himself.
I have no idea why my hip hurts.
So maybe someone can help.
But I feel like I'm a boomer and I feel like I'm 72 years old. The fact that my hip hurts, I don't get it.
You were giving it all at practice today for the Texans? Maybe you hurt something.
I didn't do anything. I stood around and did nothing. I barely even moved. Anyways.
Was Cody there? I heard you guys were pass blocking on the side.
Yeah, Cody and I spent 10 minutes
ago. Did you do the Oklahoma drill?
I don't think you understand what happens to media members at training camp.
Probably right. Probably absolutely.
No, we're not doing Oklahoma drills. I don't like my chances there either. Okay. Anyways, Josh Hader's been traded. He's gone. He's leaving Milwaukee to head over to San Diego. What a great trade-off that is, leaving that lousy state.
Hey, whoa. Whoa. That cheap city. I don't think that they wanted to pay anybody. Now, they have bullpen in waiting and closer in waiting that they feel like they're going to be okay. But they better have gotten a decent haul for him because of the fact that it's one thing to say that the Padres are in go-for-it mode. They continue to do that with Machado and Tatis Jr. and the moves they made, Hosmer before that, and all the different moves they've made to really enhance their payroll and their chances to win. But this is just another go-for-it, swing-for-the-fences move from the Pods. So you know if you're a Padres fan, you love exactly what their aggressiveness is and where they're trying to go to.
Yeah.
If you're the Brewers, who are one of the top five favorites going into the season and continue to be up there in terms of Vegas odds to try and win it all, and you've got a great pitching staff, and you know you've got a lot of elements that really make you look like a contender, every single year you either fall short or you do something like this and say, yeah, we got a couple guys, we're not going to pay them, we're going to let them walk, we'll just try and replenish it and get someone like them. At a certain point, it gets old, it gets tired, and the results aren't there that say, well, you went for it, got it, and then you pulled the plug.
Yeah. So that's the biggest bullpen arm that's going to be traded. Whenever I put together some targets for the Houston Astros, I didn't include Josh Hader because I didn't figure he was going to be traded. I know that his name had been mentioned a couple times, but felt like a long shot, not so much a long shot. So he's off the board. Some of the other bullpen arms that are out there, you know, we've talked about David Robertson, Bednar from Pittsburgh. Barlow is a name that I like from Kansas City. The Yankees actually traded one that I liked from, I forget his name off the top of my head. The Cubs traded him to the Yankees. So the Yankees adding to a bullpen that was depleted a little bit by King. But we saw the Astros play baseball this weekend. You and I have been in some different spots about the bullpen throughout the year. Best bullpen ERA in all Major League Baseball, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But watching these last two games for the Houston Astros, Saturday, okay, you got a two-run lead there in the ninth. Ryan Pressly, who's been great, leadoff walk, you know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. All of a sudden, Abraham Toro, two-run base hit, scores the tying run, scores the go-ahead run. Mariners win 5-4. They steal a victory on Saturday. yesterday, Jake, it wasn't Jake Odorizzi yesterday. Yesterday was his alter ego, Cy Odorizzi, whenever he's pitching very well. Cy Odorizzi was brilliant. Left the game with a 2-0 lead. Ryan Stanek, who's been sensational all year long, 2-run jack. All of a sudden, tie game, has to go into extra innings. Now, you do win it in extra innings, but you blow the start of Cy Odorizzi. You make that game a sweat when it looked like you were going to cruise to the series win, take 3 of 4. Ultimately got the win, but you did blow it. Now that you've seen these last 2 days, yesterday you blow the lead, Saturday you blow the game, where do you stand with the pecking order for relief pitching on this Houston Astro team ahead of tomorrow's deadline?
I've been a staunch supporter that they needed to enhance the bullpen from the time we started preseason till right now, but I had them at number 2. I bumped it back up to number 1. I'm very concerned about the depth of this bullpen. I know, and everybody's going to say, well, Stanek's been on a roll, and so is Presley, right? Okay, but you don't get do-overs, and you don't get to just, you know, say, take a sigh of relief and go, but, you know, we did it again the next day, but we got out of it and we got a win. But you know what? You should have swept the Mariners. Not 1-3 of 4, as good as that feels. You look at the games that they've lost. Take the Oakland series out of it because no one was there. It was a letdown series. It was a trap series waiting to happen. So just for a second, take it out. Of the meaningful games they've played against playoff caliber teams, and you look at the 2 losses to the Yankees, it's the same thing. You got quality starting pitching followed by a bullpen that imploded. I'm not saying they're not good enough. I'm saying that you need to have more options and more arms so that you don't run the risk of doing something stupid in the playoffs that costs you a chance at your second World Series title. I think that when you look at all these things and the fact that the bats are warming, the ones we were deeply concerned about, Maldonado, if you look at his numbers over the last month and a half, are night and day better. Julian, you were tweeting about this. Yuli's numbers are a hell of a lot better, and now he's not on life support anymore. We know Alex Bregman's been on a tear. Center field now looks like the biggest problem. So you look at all these things and say, okay, there's not as many issues that may have to be addressed. But to me, the first one that they have to focus on, especially with Hader going and some of the bullpen arms that are either going to go or already have gone, like you mentioned with the Cubs and the Yankees, I think that you've got to focus on that if you're James Click and go, we're close, but we're not where we need to be for the playoffs. It's good for 162. It's not going to be so great if you head to the playoffs like that.
It has been great for the 162, yes. Top bullpen ERA in all of baseball. Now, I don't disagree with you, but to play Ryan Stanek advocate for just one moment, like if you trade for an arm, it's going to have to be an arm that gives you more of a high leverage guy, right? Because if you're trading, like this was my, let's just use David Robertson as an example because it was the latest and greatest name that, you know, we kind of disagreed on. Yep. Like David Robertson, to me, in my opinion, does an upgrade of a Stanek, Neris, Montero, Presley that you have, those top 4 guys. So, like, if you're acquiring an arm, does it have to be somebody else that's going to lower the leverage meter for one of those guys?
No, I think, look, ideally, I'd like it to be a high leverage guy, and Robertson's been a closer. His numbers have been really good this year, and he's also been on that big stage with the Yankees enough times in tough situations, high leverage situations. He can do whatever you need him to do, and I think that's the most important thing. That you have more options to guys that you can trust that when you put them in the game, no matter what the leverage situation is and how, the magnitude of a moment, that it's not too big, that they're going to handle it and they're going to attack the situation. And we know that there are days, and we've joked about it and we've been dead serious about, from Stanek to several other guys in the pen, you know after 4 pitches what kind of day it's going to be when they start, you know, when they start pitching. And if they, you know, Stanek in particular, if he's off in his first 4 pitches, you got to be concerned. Presley, 4-pitch walk, starts that inning. And when I'm evaluating the bullpen, I just don't see enough in terms of that between the ears with Abreu. You know this.
He's not a high-leverage guy.
No, I know that. I know that. But I'm saying I'm not saying you did. I'm saying I personally look at that and say, yes, we know the guys you could go to. And it's weird that Neris is in the – he was your 8th-inning guy. Then he was your 7th-inning guy. Then he wasn't your guy. Now he is back in at your guy. And he did a good job. But the guys that have closed before, the guys that have had the kind of bigger experiences, the veterans with that kind of intestinal fortitude, they could use 1 or 2 more.
So for you, it's more of like a depth play. Because like if you look at that game yesterday, or you use Saturday's game as the example. Like Saturday's game, that's Presley's game. Like whoever you trade for is not pitching in that spot, that's Presley's game. Unless it was Josh Hader, and Josh Hader is no longer on the block. Yesterday, it was a 2-run game. I believe he gave up the homer in the 8th, right? Stanek gave up the tying two-run homer in the eighth inning. Like, that's Stanek inning. So, like, unless you're trading for somebody who's higher on the pecking order than Presley, Stanek, Montero, Neris, because right now it's Presley at the very tip top. It seems like it's Montero, Neris, Stanek. Those are your last four guys high leverage spots. So unless it's for a pitcher that's higher leverage than those guys where you're rearranging the pecking order, it wouldn't have influenced yesterday's game because Stanek has the eighth, and it's not going to influence Saturday's game because same situation, Presley's got that ninth inning.
Now, do you say it's depth, or I'm just going to say you have more options? Because I think that a lot of times, and especially when you get into the playoffs, when we're not going to get into the quirkiness of extra inning baseball, and in a situation like yesterday, but without a runner on second base, and you've already burnt through one of your guys or two of your guys, now you've got a few other guys that can come in that have closer-esque type stuff that can come in and keep you in a ball game, keep it scoreless, pitch through some things, and give you the best chance to win, as opposed to, God, we're out of arms. Seth Martinez has to come in
right now,
or Brian Abreu.
Yeah. Now, like, I agree with you. Like, if you're trading for David Robertson, that's an upgrade over Abreu, even though I love Abreu's stuff. Like, Seth, in the playoffs, Seth Martinez is there as well. Now, the number crunch is going to be fascinating because Lance McCullers is going to come back, you think, in a couple of weeks. So now that's going to send one arm down. If you trade for another arm, it's going to send another arm away. It's either, in that case, if you're adding two, you're subtracting two, it's Abreu-Martinez, unless there's a trade of Odorizzi or one of the young starters. So, like, I agree with you. Like, Robertson's a better option in the postseason than Abreu-Martinez. You got some options with, like, is he good against righties, certain hitters, et cetera, with his arsenal, his stuff. But it wouldn't have influenced yesterday's game or Saturday's game.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it's more of a focus that those are the games that you can just kind of say, all right, let's move forward and forget about because it's regular season. Whereas in a five-game or a seven-game series, it's a whole different aspect. And also, I think to where you said that it gives you depth and options, I think the depth part of it comes into if Presley still has issues, if he's got to go back-to-back in high-leverage situations in the playoffs. If you have any doubt at all, you want to be able to have other guys that you can put into the different options. And then the domino effect means if you slide Neris or Stanek up, you have an extra guy with experience, you slide in.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, it's just better. It's an overall more trusted quality bullpen.
To me, it's, look, I'm for that. But if we're ranking the hierarchy of needs in this team, that's where I go bat and where you go arm. Because if, like, adding the fifth most high leverage relief pitcher versus adding a bat that could be middle of the order, give me the bat. What do you think, though, Hive? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. We'll take your thoughts. We'll take your questions. Also, it was the return of Cy Odorizzi, and we got to give Cy Odorizzi his flowers.
Cy stands for Creighton Ulysses?
It stands for Cy Young.
Oh, I thought it was Creighton Ulysses Odorizzi.
All right. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
3209 thought it'd be a good idea to text us heinous, awful thoughts, reminding us that the Astros still have Phil Maton in the
bullpen. Talk about a guy, the circle of trust. He's a square. He doesn't fit.
Pretty good against lefties.
Might have been questionable in the past and up and down. There's no up. It's all down, and he has no trust. He shouldn't have any trust right now.
You know how I feel about Phil Maton?
I don't know.
Phil Maton's look. Phil Maton's look is how I feel about Phil Maton. Just the resting B face where you just kind of...
His look is my last name.
Blank.
It is. He has the
look
most
at that recall, by the way.
The most non-expressional facial... Every time he walks off the mound, whether it's the immaculate inning, or he got lit up like a bonfire. He just walks off like, hey, where's dinner?
I saw Cool Cat Cow today, by the way.
Oh,
I don't know why that voice reminded me of Cool Cat Cow, but
well,
it did.
It's close, Jeremy, but it's not the same thing as when I'm evaluating my team.
713-780-ESPN. Also on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. Texan Matt on Twitch says that the Astros need a lefty option. How gung-ho are you about a lefty in this bullpen?
I want just quality arms because we've seen the splits and the reverse splits, and we know that there are guys, including a Maton in the past, but there are guys that
now
sometimes can be even more effective against lefties than righties. So it's not as pressing to me that you get, do you call them a loogie?
Yeah, loogies.
Yeah, I don't need to necessarily specifically say a loogie. I just need upgrades in the pen so that I trust more the guys in the bullpen, because there, you know, there's a quality name that was brought up in terms of the name itself of a guy that a lot of people used to have a lot of faith in and a lot of trust, that now I think just about everybody that's an Astros fan says they kind of cringe a little bit when Phil Maton's coming into a game.
Yeah.
So you need to upgrade that. And therefore, I don't think you focus on which side of the rubber he's throwing from. It's more to me about just veteran guys that are better and more experienced that you feel better about when they go into a game.
Yeah, he's to me, he's just a guy. Like, if you moved on from Phil Maton, I don't think that they are. Let me be very clear on that. I don't think that they are moving on from Maton at all. But he's just a guy. He's a back end of the bullpen guy. He's all right. He's not terrible. He's not bad. Even last year in the playoffs, he was actually pretty good. I'm with you on the lefties, though. Like, the three batter minimum rule to me, like, is the death of the loogies. Like, you can come in, bring in a lefty, one pitcher or one hitter, and then if he doesn't get him out, okay, well, he's out of the game. If he gets him out, well, he's out of the game. Now that you have the three batter minimum, I understand that he could still technically only face one batter if it's the last out of the inning. But what happens if that lefty gets on base? Now you got a lefty against a righty who's going to hit him much better than the lefty would that you got to face. So I'm not gung-ho saying that the Astros must have a lefty. To me, it's more of a luxury than a necessity.
Do you feel the three-batter minimum is the reason why Dusty staggers?
No. I feel like it's less reason to stagger. And if you think about this, too, Alex Bregman's been terrible against lefties this year. Bregman's been way better against righties than lefties. So if you're an opposing manager and you have the three-batter minimum, you go Yordan, Bregman, Tucker, what are you bringing in your lefty? Like, it's like here's what we're doing to you. Dusty's telling this to opposing managers. We're going to stack up our three, well, I shouldn't say three worst hitters against lefties, but we're going to go lefty, hitter that's bad against lefties, lefties. Okay, well, I know what pocket I'm bringing in my lefty.
Exactly. But yeah. I think the premise behind it, which is why Dusty, in terms of if he is actually putting deep thought into anything, that he would actually think that way. But I look at it and I say, look, you know, Chafin's a guy that's on the market that if you can get him for the right price, then he could maybe fit the best of both worlds. But other than that, I just want better relief pitchers that are veteran, that have been tested. And I don't think that's too much to ask. I don't think the price should be too high for that.
I'm with you, too. Give me the quality arm. Give me the if it doesn't mean the optimal handedness, whatever.
And
give
like
me
from a Robertson perspective, he's making 3.5. I mean, you talk about an affordable arm that gives you a more trusted guy that you can go to for Dusty. I think that's perfect.
The money should not be an issue for the Astros. They're way under the competitive balance tax. I could see the Astros adding salary to lessen the prospect return for certain people as well. A couple of texts here, 713-780-ESPN. Need another Graveman. The problem with that, I don't think the Graveman's on the market.
But he's like a rental.
Yeah.
No, you don't want Graveman personally. He needs another. I think they mean you need another one like Graveman.
Yeah, I think a quality arm
Graveman
like Graveman.
Has fallen off a little bit with the White Sox.
He was not as good as he was last year. He's been good. Now, the dollar associated to his name, too. Is he playing up to the dollar? Maybe not. The two arms that I love in this trade market that I would go after, they aren't the big name. Bednar for Pittsburgh, who has been really good. And then the Scott Barlow kid from Kansas City are a couple of arms that I really like. 6030, I have no faith Click is getting anything significant done by the deadline. I saw somewhere else, I can't remember where I saw it, either Twitch or the text line, saying, no, I have no faith in penny pincher James Click. Is that a fair label for the Astros GM?
Not yet. If they do absolutely nothing by the time and the deadline comes and goes, then, I mean, I've been barking this, you know, till I'm blue in the face, that I'm waiting until the deadline, and that was in spring training. They didn't have to do anything immediately, but they had to do something. And I believe that what we've heard from multiple sources about how aggressive he's been, about him trying to jumpstart the market, about him calling just about anybody and everybody to explore every option that he could possibly have, I feel like he's doing the due diligence. I feel like he wants to get things done. The quote we had from Randy McAvoy on Sports Sunday, of his conversation with him a week or so ago about the fact that Crane said, you know, now it's on you to do what you need to do to make sure this team has everything it needs to win another World Series, makes me believe that the internal wheels are turning and that there's something to be done. And I'm not going to say it has to be this many moves or one or two or three. Just make this team better. And I believe he's trying to do that. So I'm going to hold out hope. But if the deadline comes and goes and they do nothing, I will be pissed off.
All right, we'll get to that at 1 o'clock. I wanted to talk about Odorizzi. Cy Odorizzi. He has two alter egos. He's never Jake Odorizzi. He's either Cy Odorizzi or he's Jake Overeasy. The only time that he's Jake Odorizzi is whenever we hear sound bites for him complaining from the clubhouse. He was really good yesterday.
Yes, he was.
You could dare to say he was brilliant yesterday for the Houston
Astros.
Two-hit
scoreless baseball for seven innings is about all you can ask for anybody, let alone a guy, you know, coming from where he's come from at his age. fantastic outing.
Eight punchies, too. Did you ever see eight punchies coming from Cy Odorizzi?
Didn't expect to see any of that.
Eight punchies.
And the fact that it wasn't against the Oakland A's either means that there's even more to like about it. He's still your bottom starter of all your starters. And I think, to be clear, because every time I am not on Twitter for a while and I come back and I have 20-some-odd mentions and I realize that somebody got into it and I didn't realize it was going to be you and PC. But, you know, the fact that at least Pat and I had a conversation last week away from Twitter on the phone, where I was very specifically clear in the fact that I don't like the way Jake has handled his business. I don't like the fact that he's not been a good teammate, that he's gone to the media to kind of be a whiny baby and bitch about, you know, he's ready and he hasn't been activated yet and he should be here and this should be there and all those kind of things. That's what pissed me off the most. I'm not saying he doesn't have the ability to be a major league pitcher anymore, but he's also in a situation where there's a plethora of starting pitching on that roster that has been pitching their ass off all season long. So it's hard for me or anybody else to say, you know, you can give him his due, that's one thing, but to give him his due and put him above and elevate him above some of the young arms that are under team control that have done more and haven't missed as much time and haven't had ups and downs like he has, okay, just miss me on that part of it if that's what you thought you heard come out of my mouth.
Yeah, I think that our show, and maybe me specifically, has been labeled as the Jake Odorizzi haters. I think we've been very honest on who Jake Odorizzi is. I was listening to Vanessa and Gallant, who do a great job on the way today, and Vanessa even mentioned, like, oh, yeah, Jake Odorizzi hater Jeremy Branham. I think Jake Odorizzi's a very average Major League Baseball starter. In fact, I've said that his value to this team, that there is value. And that the value that he has is that he can eat up innings at a very average way to save the arms of Justin Verlander, of Framber Valdez, of Christian Javier, Luis Garcia, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The trouble that you have now, and why I've been very vocal on the trade Odorizzi train ahead of tomorrow's deadline, there's a couple of reasons. One, Odorizzi, some people would say starting pitching peanuts for the amount of money that he's making, which next year can be anywhere between $6.5 to $12.5 million. But we know that it carries a 7.833, repeating, of course, value for the competitive balance tax. They take the average annual value each and every year. And I think that's significant when you're going to be in the market for potentially a catcher, a first baseman, a left fielder, and or a reliever as well. Also, I've looked forward to the roster crunch that's going to happen with this pitching staff. If you don't trade an Odorizzi, or I'm sorry, if you don't trade an Urquidy, a Garcia, or a Javier, you're also getting the return of Lance McCullers, we think August 15th. That's the guest of the Killer Bees, and it seems like he might be a day ahead of schedule for that. What do you do now? Jake Odorizzi, suddenly your seventh starting pitcher. You're not going to have a seven-man rotation, so now he's your long reliever. And you might say, well, $6.5 to $12.5 million is small pennies for a starting pitcher. Well, he's not a starting pitcher at that point. Now he's a long reliever that's making $7.8 million. On top of that, you have Hunter Brown waiting down on the farm.
And on top of that, how do you know he's going to be willing to accept the demotion to the bullpen, right? He won't be happy. He doesn't want to do it. He bitched and moaned about that the last time you tried to do that, too. And again, I go back to what is the crux of everything that tells me, on top of everything that you said, that it is addition by subtraction, and the best thing they can possibly do is one way or another move on from Jake Odorizzi, including his contract for next season. But more importantly, it's because he doesn't want to go to the bullpen. He bitched about it the last time you asked him to do it. You asked nicely. You tried to play good guy with him. He bitched and moaned and even got mad at Dusty when it didn't go the way he wanted it to go. He took forever to get ready. You didn't know when he was going to be able to go in, and once he was used, you didn't know if you'd have him for another week. And so all of that on top of his Berman interviews and the fact that it's about me instead of team and all these other things mean if you didn't have options, then absolutely. He's a part of your rotation. He's going to be a part of the playoff roster. He's going to be a guy that whether you like it or not, you need and are going to have to count on. You have options. You have other guys that are as good or better, and you don't have to deal with the me factor in doing anything that you're doing and handle them with kid gloves like, God, who's going to be the one to talk to Jake and tell him we're going to move him to the pen, otherwise we're not going to put him on the roster? And from Ken Giles to all the other problem children that they've had in that clubhouse, they don't need another distraction when he doesn't like the decision that you choose to make, and it doesn't include him being where he wants to be.
Yeah, and I loved his start yesterday, too. The fact that, like, whenever they said there was actually scouts at Minute Maid Park watching Odorizzi pitch yesterday, by the way.
They charged him for seats.
And probably not. And the Cardinals were also inquiring about his services. So I am hopeful that the Astros can trade him. And I love that start yesterday because going into that start, if I'm an opposing scout, there's two things, really one thing that I'm looking for. is the blister like an ongoing problem? And it obviously was not because he went 7 shutout innings. And then can he be effective? He showed that he can be effective. I think he's a likely name to get traded tomorrow.
I was looking for him doing something against someone other than the A's. Yeah. You know, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, and look, teams figure guys out. But his last start, I even gave him some credit saying, look, when a team sees you for the third time in like less than a month, there are certain tendencies that they're going to figure out. There's certain pitches they know what they're going to do. The fact that he did it against a playoff caliber team like Seattle, though they were down a couple of guys, I'm not even going to discount that and say that, there was lesser because of that. Yep. He did his job. He did it against a different team, and he did it well.
713-780-ESPN. We're under 30 hours until the Major League Baseball trade deadline. We got into it a little bit there, but are there any nerves about them not making a move or not making a big enough move? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.